How's it going and welcome to episode 67 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. I am once again joined by my co-host Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter himself at Hastings Kevin. And I noticed, Kevin, you got a nice little backdrop going on. It looks like you're getting settled in your place in Hawaii. How's that process working out for you?
It's going pretty well. We're starting. We got our shipping container was delivered on Thursday. Most things are unpacked, but the big one, as I was a couple of minutes late for this recording, the big one was our washer and dryer, been ordered since February, will be here on Wednesday. No more laundromat.
Dude, you and I were in the same boat for a while. I had my washer and dryer that I ordered in like on Black Friday, got delivered today.
Nice. Congratulations.
That is a process.
Yes.
I will never recommend anybody buying directly from the manufacturer. I won't even name which one because they rely on a third party delivery logistics company. And this one...
I don't think it matters how you're ordering or who from right now. Logistics are a nightmare for everybody, no matter what it is at this point.
My father-in-law bought a brand new fridge from Best Buy, got it like next day installed. He probably wasn't that picky on which one he wanted. He's just, I want that one. Fine, we have it. Okay, cool. Give it to me. And so that part's great. And my house wasn't ready to accept my washer, dryer, and my refrigerator anyway. But still, it's just... the process was a nightmare. So I'm happy that you have yours. I'm happier, no offense, that I have mine. Clean clothes are a good thing to have. All right, enough talk about dirty laundry, and let's get right into it. And luckily, we have a very special guest with us this week to break down the fab, and that is Van Burnett. Van, of course, is half of the Wins Above Fantasy podcast duo that comes out regularly on Thursday nights right here on the Pitcher List Podcast Network main feed. Make sure you're checking that out if you aren't already. And make sure you're following Van on the Twitter at Van_verified. And check out Wins Above Fantasy as well at Wins Above Pod. Links to both of those can be found in the show description, of course. So check that out. Van, man, thanks for joining us. How's life treating you?
Life's great, guys. Did a little golfing today, golfing tomorrow. The wife is just left for San Diego for a work conference. So it's just me and the dog and the cats here. And actually, I'm doing a laundry cycle right now. So I know you're trying to segue out of it, Adam, but no, I'm super pumped to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. As you guys know, most of your guests probably tell you, but your podcast is certainly a part of my weekend routine to figure out what the heck I'm doing for NFBC. Because as much as I've been a lifelong fantasy guy, I am about 2 years young to the NFBC industry league. So getting used to the platform and just figuring out on how deep to go on some of the ads, the help is much appreciated, guys, and love the great work you do.
We got it in early, Kevin. We got it in early this week. So I appreciate that, Van. Thank you for the kind words. I heard you say the wife, and that's a new term that you're able to use. So congratulations. I only know this because I filled in for you on Wins Above Pod, not once, but twice, because you got married once, but were lucky enough to take two honeymoons.
That's correct. You're my DH designated honeymoon podcaster.
I'm on retainer.
And then you jumped on when Steve was on his honeymoon as well. So yes, one of these times we'll have to have an ordinary time podcast with all three of us. But yeah, it's been a fun year and a half, and it's been hilarious to be paired up with Steve Giswelli because we're on the same walks of life here and everything. Yeah, he actually asked me on our podcast to fly out and attend his wedding, and I had never met him in person. So I go out there, my wife and I, Alyssa, we're racing on Jersey Shore, and we like miss this tiny boardwalk entrance to this beautiful chapel. And we go in there and it's this big Italian wedding. We're Midwest. So we like walk in and we're just like, we don't know anyone here. So we sit down as they're playing the beautiful music, and Steve and Lauren walk to the front. They do their vows, and Lauren goes, "And I'll always love you, Steve, even with your three monitors and baseball and doing your podcast." And everyone laughs. And then she goes, Wins Above Fantasy. Shout out to Van Burnett out there. And I was just like, what?
You got a shout out at his wedding. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, it was hilarious. And at that moment, like five of his home league buddies turn and point at me and they're like, hey, man. And I'm like, all right, maybe this won't be so awkward and weird. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun over there. And I know the podcast network in general at Pitcherless, it seems like everyone's just rock and roll, man. It's a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a FSWA winning podcast feed. And we can't forget, we don't say that enough. I should probably spout that out as much as possible, but I don't think I've mentioned it more than once when it first happened. So it is a good place to be. You guys are rocking it over there. So if anybody is listening here, you're listening not on the main feed, perhaps, maybe you're just listening to our feed, make sure you check out Wins Above Fantasy on Thursdays and the rest of the Pitcherless podcast main feed as well. But enough talking about how great everything is going. And let's talk about maybe some things that aren't going so great. Maybe there are some good things in here as well, but we're talking about our news and notes section. We'll get right into it. As we tend to do, we talk about news and notes that may or may not, mostly may, affect your FAB considerations for this weekend. So I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff in here that we're not going to talk about, but there's other podcasts for that we'll get to in a little bit. For ours, Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Trade season starting, I'm not saying early because there's always like a trade right before like the break. This is not a big trade, but it's a trade nonetheless, and it will have an impact probably on both teams, at least on their offensive side. And that's Christian Betancourt traded to Tampa Bay from the Oakland A's, their catcher slash DH slash first base fill-in. What kind of impact are you expecting to see out of both the him being out of the Oakland lineup and into the Tampa?
Not a whole lot, really, Adam. With Betancourt out in Tampa, I think we'll see him play versus lefties once in a while, giving Francisco Mejia a break while Mike Zunino is out. And that's what's really intriguing here is we have no idea what's going on with Mike Zunino. I don't see any updates that have come out since mid-June when we were told, oh, it might be a little more than the minimum 10 days. He got a Botox injection to try to speed up the progress in his recovery from injury. And now nothing. That was 3 weeks ago. So evidently it didn't speed up the progress in his recovery from injury. So we might see Betancourt here for a while. I don't think he'll get a lot of the DH appearances that he was getting a few of in Oakland. For all the talk about how much Tampa moves guys around, their top seven of their lineup has been pretty steady recently. With Yandy Diaz, Wander Franco, even Harold Ramirez playing nearly every day. G-Man Choi, Randy Arozarena, Isaac Paredes now with the production he's been doing lately, and Kevin Kiermaier is their center fielder. So his at-bats are coming as catcher, which most teams will give their second catcher a couple of at-bats a week, but that's all I expect to see out of Betancourt. Like I said, especially against lefties, and he cooled off. A month or so ago, he was a pretty hot commodity on some deep league waiver wires. Hasn't had a home run since early June. Cooled off OPS in the 600s. So he's a backup catcher is what he is now. On the Oakland side, probably a few more DH opportunities for some. Steven Vogt was getting the backup catching appearances anyway on occasion. Maybe a little more of that. Maybe a few more at-bats for Sean Murphy. That'll be really great for those rostering Sean Murphy, getting a few extra plate appearances. But that offense is horrible. So not much actionable there. So really not a whole lot of impact either way, but some, like you said.
Yeah, I picked up Betancourt, like you said, like about a month ago when he was hot. But it was mostly because he was playing pretty much every day. He was filling right in those off days as DH. He had filled in at first base a couple times here or there. And he was playing six, sometimes seven games a week if they had that many scheduled. This is an easy drop for me based on, if not the production alone, like he should have probably been dropped in like a week ago or so, but in the one or two places I still have him, he'll be an easy drop for me this weekend, knowing that the one good thing that was about him was the playing time is now gone in Tampa for sure. It'll be easy to pick back up if Tampa decides to prove me wrong somehow there. All right, Van, we'll go up north to Toronto, and Yusei Kikuchi did hit the IL for the Blue Jays. With him missing in the rotation, what kind of addition are you seeing, or what kind of adjustments are you seeing Toronto making with his absence?
Yeah, it's funny how many people, you really should never laugh or joke about any injury related things, but with Kikuchi's struggle, I know it's listed as a neck strain, and a lot of the disgruntled Jays fans on Twitter were like, oh, it's probably a neck strain from looking at the runners on second base, and it's a chuckle. But yeah, all jokes aside, hope Kikuchi's okay there. But in general, Thomas Hatch was recently a spot start for them, but he got pummeled. I think it was 10 runs in 3 2/3 or 4 innings or something. So it looks like Max Castillo is replacing him. Left-handed pitcher, 23. He's a specimen as well, 6'2", 280. And Castillo's, he's got some interesting stuff about him. In that he pitched 3 innings last night against the Mariners and had 5 strikeouts. So it seems like they're starting to stretch him out. He did give up a home run to Eugenio Suarez, but overall that was the only run. So it was a good outing. And he actually has decent strikeout upside, really relies on a fastball changeup combo. So you would think a little bit better in the bullpen with the limited pitch mix, but the K rate across 56 innings in the high minors this year has been 29%. The walks are a little bit of the concern for Castillo. I think that's going to be what you want to watch for. It's been an 11% walk rate in the minors so far. And yeah, the two pitches concern me. The fastball sits around 93, 94. Overall, if you're desperate, I think that this could be someone you turn to with Max Castillo. That they got a decent run of games coming up with the Phillies. The Royals is a nice one. Red Sox, Cardinals, not great. And then Tigers, Rays, Twins, Orioles, Guardians. So if he's in there for a while, it might look bad at first, but then there might be some cushy matchups there for Castillo. And yeah, the strikeout rate is at least enough to keep an eye on. This kind of falls into that stream and see what happens bucket for me if you're desperate for some starting pitcher help.
Yeah, especially if he's not quite stretched out early on. Like you said, he's hit that 3-inning mark. I wonder how long it'll take to get him into the win column unless they decide to employ an opener in front of him, which seemingly has been less oftenly used. Did I say that right? Probably not. Yeah. Across baseball, and which is really disappointing for those trying to stream guys that are only going to go 3 or 4 innings
for the wins.
To get the opener. Yeah. Not getting those wins still category in most leagues. Let's remember that, especially the ones that we talk about here. All right, Kevin, a bunch of Miami pitchers threw bullpens this week as they all try to return to the Marlins rotation at some point or another. Edward Cabrera, Jesus Luzardo, and Sixto Sanchez each threw a bullpen session in the past 3 days. Are you stashing any of these guys expecting actual production for them after probably the All-Star break at the earliest?
Yeah, I think so with Edward Cabrera. He's the most likely that we'll see back soon. We saw him the most recently at 3 starts in June. The first 2 great, 1 earned run and 12 innings pitched. Yeah, it was Washington and Colorado, but it was great to see him get that hot start. Roughed up at Houston. The elbow tendonitis may have played a role in that outing, and he probably would have been back already, it sounds, but in the middle of his recovery, he left the team for personal reasons for a couple of days. So that set him back a little bit. Now he's got another bullpen session. I think we see him pretty soon after the All-Star break. Luzardo, that was his first bullpen session yesterday. It's been almost 2 months. He's got a long injury history. We know it's a forearm strain that we're worried about. There's all kinds of concerns still, but monitor it and see what we have after the break as he continues to progress. And while Sixto Sanchez's progress is great to hear about, he's still got a long way to go. Multiple reports are that he may not even be cleared to face live hitters, even at the minor league level this season. However, something to keep an eye on as he continues to progress is the Miami Marlins are not as bad as people thought they might be, right? Coming into Saturday, as we're recording, they were 4 games back of a wild card with like nobody behind them and only a couple of teams to jump. It's like after them, there's nobody else. So it's not like they have to jump over 6 teams to make these expanded playoffs. They did get beat by the Mets on Saturday, but they got Alcantara going on Sunday. So however, if that goes well, and then a 7-game week, 4 games with Pittsburgh, we could very well see a 500 Miami Marlins ball club going into the All-Star break. If that's the case and they come back out, they're playing well, Sanchez continues to progress, maybe even a little bit ahead of schedule of what they're planning from here on out, they could change their mind if it means a post season appearance, even if it's just a couple of games that they would get to play in October. It's something a team like the Marlins would welcome immensely. Sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I keep an eye on it as well. But the only one that is imminent in my mind is Edward Cabrera.
Yeah, it's probably fair. First, you said that you're talking about Miami being four games back the wild card. And for some reason, I thought you were talking about the Baltimore Orioles, because lo and behold, they are also four games back from the wild card, if you can believe that. So strange things happening in the Eastern Division of both leagues. And the Alex Fasts of the world can be ecstatic if that possibility could actually make the next leap in the second half of the season. All right, stay in the AL East. Like, I like to drive my own Segway scooter sometimes and move it that way.
I was going to compliment. As a host, I was like, are you going to take that AL East and run with it? Well done.
I ruined it just by calling it out, but we'll go with it anyway. In the AL East, Chris Sale may very well. He's expected to start for the Red Sox in Boston on Tuesday. And that's after he finishes cleaning up his mess he left in the Worcester clubhouse after his little temper tantrum last week or earlier this week. But my question to you is, if you have Sale anywhere, are you putting him right back into your active lineup this week? Or do you have more of a wait and see approach with Sale and the length, how long it took him to come back after his lackluster performance in Worcester?
Yeah, first of all, the video itself was something to see. So if you guys have not, go out to Twitter and check the Sale meltdown in the tunnel. But did you see the Woo Sox action to it, Adam? I guess like their PR team put basically Taekwondo like punching bag with a taped TV on it for Sale to just like unrail, because he was trying to tear the shelf off the wall and then he started doing like a high kick. And then he went with the high kick and I was like, watch the hamstring, please, Chris Sale. No, this is a tough call in terms of this week for Sale. I'm looking at the pros and cons. So he's got the two-start pitcher lined up, but it's against the Rays, who are not great against lefties. So that's a plus. But then it's the Yankees, who that's not the matchup you want to see. And especially last time Sale played the Yankees, which actually wasn't, I don't think it was until back in 2019, but he's had some bad outings against the Yankees, which you probably recall, Adam. I think got 9 earned his last time out against them. So we'll see on the matchups. But there's some positives. He was throwing 97, but the command was out of control when he was in Worcester. This, I would say, if you're looking for 8 innings and you're okay with the ratios looking ugly, that you can roll him out there. The Red Sox clearly need the help here. They need to push. Their rotation right now is desperately calling for Eovaldi and Sale to return. So he could push to 5 innings. Went back and checked on his return start from Tommy John last season just to see what it was. And he did go 5 innings and had a nice outing. So take that with a grain of salt. So you can make an argument one way or another, but if you need the volume, certainly you can do worse than Chris Sale in some of the deeper industry leagues. But I think vacuum answer, I'd probably skip it unless I really needed the volume of strikeouts. I don't think you can really count on wins just with the innings limit he'll probably be on. But if you need the K's, go ahead.
Yeah, of course, also playing against the Yankees, who they're playing right now as well. That's going to hurt the opportunity for wins. You're right, though. That rotation, man, they need him. And my instinct would have been like, yeah, he's lined up for 2, but he's not going to get both starts. But now with Waka also being out of the rotation, Eovaldi not being available yet, he very well might get both of those starts. It's going to be really hard for me not to start him with knowing that he's going to get those 2 starts with his track record and his quote sportsmanship that he can put on the field, at least knowing that he's going to get a full 5, if not 6 or 7 days off after or during the All-Star break. It's going to be hard for me not to put him into the lineups that lock weekly, like the NFBC. Now, if I'm in a daily league, I might hold back from that first start to see where he does. And if he gets that Sunday start, lock him in, even though it is against the Yankees, depending on how he feels, all the reports after the fact. But in the NFBC, I've got him. I think I only got him in 1 spot, and it's going to be really hard for me not to put him in there myself.
Yeah, my only share is a best ball, so
you don't have a choice.
Don't have that option. Don't have to worry about it.
All right, Kevin, another IL sent here. Tyler Molly goes to the IL with a right shoulder strain. What kind of impact are you seeing on the Cincinnati rotation? And curious if you even know this, but have we seen the same kind of Hoden Rome splits for Cincy pitchers and hitters that we've seen from Colorado, like you talked about a couple of weeks ago?
For hitters, yes. For pitchers, no. They're bad. The pitchers are just bad, regardless of where
they're. Doesn't matter where they are.
Yeah. They're dead last in ERA at home. They're 29th on the road. Little caveat to this, home road splits. As Nick Pollock and Derek Carty said when I was out in Arizona, I think I talked about this in the offseason, home road splits are dumb because you're the road game, one for one, everybody plays in a different home ballpark also. And then on the road, where are you playing? The ballparks matter. It's more about ballpark factors. The reason that when we're talking about Colorado, it's a little different is because we're talking about the movement of pitches, especially for the hitters. So then it's a home road split that really is something. Doesn't matter where they're playing, they can't hit the ball. But in general, yeah, the hitters have a 7.33 OPS as a group at home, 13th in the major leagues, as bad as they started out the season. They're in the top half in baseball, but they're 29th on the road with the 6.23 OPS. So the hitters, yes, and it's a lot to do with the actual ballpark itself, of course, the factors there, right behind Coors Field for home runs. And I think for much of the season and a couple seasons in the past, it's actually been ahead of Coors Field, actually, for
at least for home runs it was that.
But even in runs, it's second in the league behind Coors on the season thus far, halfway through. So yeah, for hitters, yes. Pitching, no. Back to Tyler Mahle, he was, as we know, pitching much better on the road than at home. 3.83 ERA away versus a 4.99 in Great American Small Park. And breaking it down to something that's more, something that we put more stake in season, his K-minus walk rate on the road, 22.1% K-minus walk. At home, 13.6. So there's a big difference for him of what he was doing home and away. With him out, there's not a lot to look at for Cincinnati here. It appears they're going to give Duggar a start here, Robert Duggar, a start this week. He does, since coming over from Tampa, have two appearances for Cincinnati, 2 months in between them, and the second one coming a couple of nights ago against Pittsburgh, 3 2/3, scoreless with 5 strikeouts. He did really well. Only 3 2/3, doesn't have any starts on the season at the major league level. He may get to 5 innings, but we're not counting on a win. And I believe it's against the Yankees, if I'm not mistaken. At the Yankees. So not somebody we're using here. They already have Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo up in the major league rotation. That's what we're looking at for Cincinnati. And then the problem with Cincinnati is right now they're set. They got Castillo, Green, and Lodolo, as I mentioned. Graham Ashcraft and Mike Minor even haven't pitched well, but they're in the rotation and probably there to stay. We get back from the All-Star break. Whether Mahle comes back right away or not, they're probably losing at least Luis Castillo. I don't know anybody that doesn't think he's going somewhere. So then we're going to be looking even further. And right now they're using probably bullpen days as it looks, unless they stretch guys like Duggar and a couple other out, but nobody we want to use on our fantasy teams.
Yes. I know we're always talking about home run splits and how dumb they are. I've heard that from you, Kevin. Yes. I've heard it from Nick a whole bunch of times, except when they're extreme. And Mahle always tends to have those extreme splits that are worth at least taking a look at, because they don't seem to be going away either. They were very strong last year. As you mentioned, they're going strong this year. So always take them with a grain of salt, unless there's some fairly obvious numbers differences that you're seeing. We'll stick with the right shoulder strains here and go, and we'll stick in the NL Central van. Kyle Hendricks goes to the IL with his own shoulder strain. What impact are you seeing to the Cubs rotation with his absence here?
Yeah, this one is musical chairs right now for the Cubbies, because Hendricks is out, which is a bummer. Steve and I talked about him earlier this week as a nice K-minus BB percent riser from the beginning of the season to we were calling it the second quarter, air quotes. But yeah, and I thought he was going to get moved before the deadline. We'll have to see with the shoulder strain. Now we got Marcus Stroman returning from the IL. He started today, Saturday, as we record this. But Justin Steele is going on paternity leave. So there's a lot of stuff moving with the Cubs. It should open up a spot for Drew Smyly to get a look. He has not pitched in, I think it's since May, and there's not much there. I think you guys even talked about Smyly last week on the show, but we've seen Smyly had good stints with the Atlanta Braves last year. He was pretty productive the year before with the Giants, and I think they're probably just trying to, they might give him a long enough look to see if there's any trade appeal before the deadline, because the Cubs definitely should be selling. And with him on a one-year deal, that is probably what he signed up for in a way. That said, I think Smyly is set to start, as you're listening to this, against the Dodgers. So quite a big litmus test there. But if he excels, I could see them potentially sending like Mark Leader Jr. down and continuing to give Smyly a run of games here again in the hopes to deal him. But I think of the list, Hendricks will be interesting when he returns. I think Justin Steele, there's plenty to be interested in as well. But Smyly, I think, is going to be the beneficiary for Hendricks' injury, and just see what happens against the Dodgers. If it looks good, if it looks like the Smyly that can come in waves and be like, oh, why is he only good the week that he's facing me? Then maybe you could ride it for a few weeks or see what happens at the deadline. But that's my take on it.
Yeah, Steele going on the paternity list, as Chad Young mentioned on First Pitch podcast this morning, may not even miss a start just based on the timing of his paternity list. He's going to pull Steve for you guys when he came back and came and recorded the day after his daughter was born. Justin Steele, get right back on that horse. We'll see how that timing works out for him. But congratulations to him and his growing family out there as well. Of course, I know he's got nothing better to do than listen to this podcast while he's taking care of a newborn.
The whole family. Thanks for tuning in. The exactly. Steele family. Yeah.
All right, Kevin, let's get away from some injuries and go to some more good news. We got a promotion, another relatively top prospect. I feel like we've had one of these a week for the last couple of weeks. In Cleveland, Nolan Jones got promoted to the Guardians on Friday and did pretty well in his first game. What are you expecting out of him for the rest of the year? Is he going to go for big fab for those who still have lots of fab left over?
If he gets to continue to face Kansas City Royals pitching the rest of the season, we're looking. He's got time to be rookie of the year, right? Yeah, after that first game, you mentioned that he performed in well on Friday, Saturday, 2-for-4 with his first home run, another 3 RBI. He's looking really good out of the gate. He hit 7th on both days with Austin Hedges and Miles Straw behind him. That's not going to be good for his run scored. That's one thing. So he didn't debut until June 6th due to an ankle surgery and a lower back issue in the offseason. But in 23 minor league games, 15.7% walk rate. He's never had a walk rate at any level before below 14.5%. That's huge because his strikeout rates have been pretty high. The 26.9% he had at AAA in those 23 games this season was down from what he's done the past couple of seasons. So that improvement's something nice to see, and we're going to need to continue to see that at the major league level for this to work out. He did have a 59% ground ball rate this season at AAA. Only 23 games once again, but something to keep an eye on. My biggest concern is what happens when Oscar Gonzalez returns. We would think Miles Straw would be a flip at the deadline, but with a 590 OPS and 13 stolen bases on the year, is that enough to move a four-year, $20 million contract that he's going to have remaining? That's probably the most puzzling offseason signing I've seen, is Miles Straw, 5 years, $25 million. Because a team like the Guardians, it'd be great if they could run Kwan and Gonzalez and Nolan Jones out there in the outfield and start prepping for the future. But it appears, unless they eat a lot of this money, which Cleveland has not been prone to do in the past, they're going to have Miles Straw on the roster still. So I'm concerned about his playing time when Oscar Gonzalez returns, which could be right after the break.
Yeah, they have some decisions to make, and we don't always like the decisions that the Cleveland Guardians front office makes, especially for our fantasy teams. But they don't care about our fantasy teams. They only care about one thing, and we all know what that is, and we'll leave that aside. Van, we're going to move on then to Texas, where it's been announced that Joe Barlow has been removed from the closer roles, specifically in those exact words. He's no longer the closer, to take away some stress from his shoulders, his metaphysical shoulders, not his actual shoulders. I think that those things are actually fine, luckily. But is there anybody, Brett Martin's gotten two straight saves in Texas. Is he the one that we should be speculating on? Or do you think that those were more just situational at the time? Is there anybody you're looking at?
Yeah, I think you have to take that at face value. It would be nice if they removed the stress for us fantasy managers by letting us know who is the closer officially. But yeah, Martin with the two saves, I think you have to assume it's him. He's got a handful of pitches, really. Good curveball, sinker, slider, four-seamer, and he gets really good whiffs on the curveball, and that's the primary pitch that he throws. He also has a good ground ball rate. So I think Brett Martin is the one to be interested in here. The sinker sits 94, but he gets good extension on that. So I think that they'll continue to roll him out there until he wobbles. And then behind him, I think you got Dennis Santana and Jose Leclerc. And I feel like we know what Leclerc is. I know we've all been, in a way, trying to dream up that he's fantasy relevant again. But to me, Dennis Santana is actually the more interesting of the two. He's had a 2.18 ERA this season across 33 innings. His slider is awesome. 2,600 on the RPM, great whiff pitch, 96 mile per hour sinker, and a 51% ground ball rate. So similar to Martin with the swing and miss breaking stuff and a nice ground ball rate. And he's got a little more velo on the fastball. So I think those two are the ones you want to look for. Leclerc's coming off elbow surgery from April, and he really hasn't been good since 2018. So I know there's some aspects of Leclerc that excite us, but overall, I think they'll stick with Martin. And then I would be interested in Santana if something happens with Martin, whether it's performance or injury or anything like that. But that's my spin on the follow-up if you had Barlow or if you're looking for save help like most of us always are.
In my handful of like fastest finger leagues, it seemed as though Santana and Leclerc were the only ones being picked up, and Martin, this was obviously a couple days ago after the news first broke, and Martin was still left out on the wire. And of course, obviously, then Martin picks up back-to-back opportunities. I will say Texas has a history of really liking their closers to walk the yard, like everybody. So Leclerc could have an opportunity to get back in there, because that's just kind of what he does. I think that's why he held the job for so long before, and gives him the opportunity to get back in there again. So don't be surprised. No, Martin obviously seems to be. At first, you thought that maybe it was a situational thing on his first save, being a lefty coming in and facing a lefty and a switch hitter and what have you. But he got the next opportunity. He'll probably have Sunday off, back pitching back to back. So we'll see if Texas can actually put three wins together straight with save opportunities, just to make things interesting before the Fab run. All right, Kevin, back to some less than good news. In San Diego, Jerickson Profar hit the 7-day IL after being diagnosed with a concussion stemming from his collision with CJ Abrams on Thursday. Luckily, he has been released from the hospital, though the scary part was obviously on the field when it looked like he was going to get up and walk off on his own accord, took a step, and then collapsed to the ground. So that was a scary moment. I'm glad to hear that he is out of the hospital, doing much better. But of course, concussion, going through the 7-day IL protocol. We're going to not see him at the very least until next weekend at the earliest. So with him being out in just the quiet productivity he's put on the field for his fantasy teams and for San Diego, he's going to be missed. So is there anything worth watching in San Diego to fill Profar's void, at least just for this coming week?
Well, yeah, I think as of a couple of weeks ago, I had checked recently, but as of a couple of weeks ago, I believe he led baseball in plate appearances. Like you said, very quietly, people weren't realizing what Profar was doing. And as you said, I hope he's all right. I don't expect him back in 7 days. The way everything looked, the way things are going with some other players, Kyle Lewis in Seattle, this can be a long, drawn out process. I don't expect to see him until at least after the All-Star break. And I think, Adam, you threw this question in here just because we haven't talked about Minnesota outfielders for a while. Because Brent Rooker has got the start the past couple of evenings, the spot in Profar's spot out there. And he had 9 home runs in 58 games last season on filling in Minnesota. It seemed like we talked about him every other week. So there is that, their low batting average, high strikeout with power. If that's what you need in a deep league, he's probably viable. He's probably who they're going to use. The other thing here, I'm still a big fan of Haesung Kim, and he's led off the last two nights. Now with Profar out of the lineup, like I said, Profar led all of baseball in plate appearances. This lineup, it turns over a lot. So where Haesung Kim is available, he might be viable now in shallower leagues where he was really only viable in deeper leagues so far this season. 682 OPS so far, but went pretty well in the leadoff spot, 2-for-4 last night. I don't think it went as well on Saturday, but he probably more plate appearances in line for
and at Coors. So that'll be a nice little landing spot if he can get going.
All right. Well done, Van. Speaking of Coors, we will move on to the Colorado Rockies, who have been without CJ Cron for the last day or two, as he left his game the other day after being hit by a pitch. Rays, I'll let you talk about them because I haven't seen any update on that. But if he does seem to be out for an elongated period of time, how should the Rockies and fantasy managers plan on replacing him if he is out for a while?
Yeah, first, transparency here. I can't take credit for that segue. That's just one of those accidental ones that we love as hosts, Adam. I'm sure you can relate. But no, Cron, it does sound like he's out, but the x-rays came back negative after the fastball by Gallen. So it sounds like he's getting Saturday as a day of rest, and he might be back Sunday. As you're listening to this, it would definitely be good to go check if he did, because if not, obviously you'd want to have some sort of backup plan in place, especially as All-Star break approaches. They might just give Cron a little bit of a rest, but obviously if he's healthy, certainly roll him out. He's been incredible this season, and honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if he got moved as well before the trade deadline. I know the Rockies are in a weird semi-rebuild with him and Bryant, but it seems like the Twins could be a good fit as they're making the playoff push at first. But in terms of fantasy backups, the one that jumps out at me would be Daniel Vogelbach, who, talk about another physique out there, Big Vogey. He's been red hot lately. And what I love about Vogelbach is the plate discipline that comes with the pop. The past 2 weeks, Vogey has a 1266 OPS, 3 homers, and during that span, 9 walks and just 7 strikeouts. So when you can get more walks and Ks and get that slugger, that's exactly what you're wanting to fill in the short term. I know he's available in one of my NFBC leagues, so he's definitely widely available out there, and he's batting cleanup almost every day for the Pirates. So I think Vogie's a great fill in there. The only thing to throw a little cold water on it is he does struggle against lefties. I think they're facing 3 or 4 this week. You might just have, he'll play, but whether or not the production's at that clip, I would maybe bet against that. The last kind of interesting thing with the Rockies themselves is Eliehiros Montero. I can't say that, and I should be able to, because he played on the Peoria Chiefs for a few seasons and I actually watched him play. But he's an interesting guy. They plugged in today at third and just moved Bryant to DH. But at AAA, Montero was in 53 games this season at a 950 OPS, 13 homers. So definitely some pop there for Montero, and maybe another reason for them to move Cron if they're looking at this as more of a true rebuild. Cron's 32 years old. So I don't know, all that speculation, but I would say for fantasy purposes, Vogie's my favorite backfill for Cron, and Montero might just be a name to watch down the line for dynasty or redraft as well.
You forget, though, he plays for Colorado, so he's 32 years old. He's just in his prime. He's in his prime here. This is like prime Colorado. Exactly. You can't expect anything out of that. Yeah, Cron has the 2-year contract. He's on the hook for next year. So $7.2 million in 2023. I don't know. You can't predict what Colorado is going to do, because it's every logical thing that they should do, they won't do. So you can just bet on the opposite of that. So right. I'm assuming Cron is still in Colorado pinstripes come August. Well, I guess we'll wait and see on that one. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up, our news and notes section for this episode. As always, I'm sure we missed a few things worth noting. keep up with all the news of the day. Make sure you're listening to the First Pitch podcast with Chad Young, Scott Chu, Daniel Port, and Kevin Hastings, which brings down the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. In just a moment, we're going to talk to Van about some of his preseason bold predictions and just how he translates the research he did before the season started to the halfway point and how much of that you hold on to as we hit into the second half. But before we do that, we are going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we are back. You're listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined, of course, co-host Kevin Hastings, and our special guest today, Van Burnett of Wins Above Fantasy. Van, we are here to talk specifically about the research that you did in the preseason and when you put out your bold predictions. Now, of course, there are a ton of bold prediction articles across the industry, across sites, across just Pitcher List in general, but I don't have all those people on the show with me today. I only have you. So we're only going to talk about yours. But Art, the thing about yours and most other Pitcher List bold prediction articles is that they are rooted in not just like mystery and like magic will make them happen. Like, they're based on actual like research and facts that you're holding on to. And as Nick Pollock will always say, there should be a 10% chance of these bold predictions actually happening. They're supposed to be bold, but not just, hey, Wander Franco is going to be the home run king and break the home run record. Like, what's the point of that? You can't get anything out of that. I want to just quickly have you go through your own bold predictions and talk to me about, first of all, which ones are holding strong, which ones are not holding strong, and talk to me about your process and how you came up with these and how much you believe in the ones that you put out there.
Yeah, no, it's certainly an article that has a reputation for being flippant, like you mentioned, and dreaming on a scenario. But I don't, given the podcast, that takes up most of my hobby time that I put toward Pitcher List and everything. So when I do bold predictions, it's my article that I sink a lot of time and research into. And as part of the process, I think there's definitely a healthy amount of StatCast data, underlying metrics that say that they should have performed better, that people are not paying attention to a potential breakout. Looking at like new opportunity or a new environment for a player, Hunter Renfro comes to mind with the move to the Brewers, where he's going to be batting cleanup, and how he quietly had that big power season with the Red Sox last year as one example. So I think when I go through 10 bold predictions, like 8 or 9 of them are positive. And then there's usually, I call it the haterade, where, you know, one year I got it right with Eugenio Suarez. This year, surprisingly, it's actually the only one right now that looks correct, but most of them are positive. And I would view those as loosely as my guys, using air quotes, but they're also ones that have a lot of volatility to them. Their rolling charts might look up and down. And I think the reason for that is, like you said, it should be something where 10%, there's a 10% chance of the outcome actually coming true. I won't be as inclined to have a bold prediction that's out there for a steady Eddie stuff and things guy like Jake Cronenworth. But on the other hand, like a Jorge Soler or Hunter Renfro or Giancarlo Stanton, who is included in mine this year, those are guys who you wouldn't be shocked if basically they popped off. And that's part of what goes into that. So it's not the eight guys I write bold predictions for are the eight guys I would kind of cement to who I'm backing for the season. But they're guys that I like for certain reasons and ones that I think have that high ceiling, low floor profile, if that makes sense. In terms of how they're doing, like I said, right now, only one of the 10 are true if it stopped today. And I don't know that I'd bet on it the rest of the way, which was that a healthy Gerrit Cole finishes outside the top 10 starting pitchers. And right now he is, surprisingly, despite the fact that he's still been productive. I think it's just been the environment and some of the breakouts that we've seen this year. But man, I honestly have had a rough shake, and people who invested in some of these guys on draft day are probably feeling it. So apologies if you saw the bold predictions piece, but Joey Votto was one where it was top three first baseman. Yasmani Grandal, I loved his story last year with changing his swing when he had a minor league rehab stint and he came back and hit well above 300. So one of the bold predictions was that Grandal was going to finish top catcher and bat 265, which he never has come close to and certainly is not this year, even prior to the injury. Blake Snell returning to ace-dom and being a top 10 pitcher. He's actually had a couple of great outings the past two games, but a little too off leading up to that to where I certainly wouldn't count on that. So just different ones like that. Some of those names you can tell are the feast or famine names, but really for me, it's underlying metrics that have an arrow pointing up, either a mechanical pitching change, like in the case of Snell, the last month, last season, he really got back to high fastballs and low breaking stuff. And that's when he completely turned into a top five pitcher in his last eight or nine starts. Mm-hmm. So my mentality was like, why wouldn't you just carry that through this year? So they all have rationale, not to toot my own horn, but I've had some people reach out to me afterwards and say, you know, thanks for putting this much time into it. These are great predictions that actually have fact behind them. It's cool to get that feedback. And that's exactly the process. It's like narrative, mechanical adjustments, underlying stats, and new environment. And then on top of that, just the type of players who tend to go up and down somewhat like a roller coaster and just gambling that it'll work out for them. So long monologue there, Adam. I hope I covered
that. No, that's the whole point of this section, right? Is the monologue for sure. But I think the underlying thing though about this is that these bold predictions, like I said, they're meant to be like 10% chance of them actually hitting the mark. They're not meant to be like, hey, you should be picking this guy in the third round because this is what's going to happen. But we all, not all, a good majority of us do research along the same lines that you put into making this article, right? In the preseason, mm-hmm. We don't all just write bold predictions of articles about it. But the fact remains is that you put all this time and all this research into the players that you think are going to do well or not, and you draft accordingly. Mm-hmm. And then you pick up accordingly throughout the course of the season based on that research, because you put so much time. Like, Kevin, I'm gonna turn this over to you, though. Like, you do as much research as anybody in the offseason. You do as much as drafting as anybody in the offseason. Like, how long do you hold on to? And let me rephrase that a little bit, because we talk about how long do you hold on to a high draft pick until you finally, I got to cut bait. I will say the same thing about the research that you put into these players. Like, how long do you hold on to that research and the mentality you have around these players that you've earned, you've grown throughout the offseason into the season before you're like, you know what, fine, my research was wrong, or they're outperforming everything? Or when do you start changing your mind based on all that time and effort you put into in the offseason?
It really depends on the depth of the league. And that probably seems obvious. In shallower leagues, we start churning players right away. After a couple of weeks, we have to be getting production on a weekly basis. The deeper the league, it's not that we can put up with lack of production for longer, but it's just that there's not going to be guys available. And if we're still working with small samples, even now we're looking at 300 plate appearances maximum. So your research could have been correct, and we haven't seen any proof that it was yet. That's still possible at this point. By now, I pretty much would have given up on anybody, even in 15-team mixed leagues, couple of examples of, I didn't do any quote unquote bold predictions, but I had guys I really liked at the end of all of my draft and hold drafts. And that's pretty much what we're talking about here, is guys that I like for one reason or another more than most people like them and got them everywhere. When we talked a little bit about earlier in the show, Haesung Kim, I really expect him to have a much better batting average this season than he has in the past and than he has so far this season. Now, it hasn't been that much below league average this season because the whole league was down, but it still hasn't been what I expected. In deeper leagues, he's still been useful to me. In 12-teamers, he hasn't been. Garrett Cooper, another one. His was completely based on health, was what I liked about him. He has, for the most part, stayed healthy. I think I still roster him pretty much everywhere where I drafted him and even picked him up in a couple of spots. But the power hasn't been what I had hoped. 7 home runs to this point, in spite of all the plate appearances. The 40 RBI are great. So he's still in my lineups, but I was counting on more than 7 home runs from a healthy Garrett Cooper. So it really depends on it. We can say this about any question we ask along these lines. It depends on the league, but in this instance, it really does depend on depth of the league for sure.
So Van, of these 10 players that you talked about in your bold predictions article, how many of them did you actually put your title on the line, your league on the line for come draft season?
Yeah, my home league is the Holy Grail. It's like a 21-year-old league. And then there's the top of my NFBC leagues that I pay close attention to. I was all in on Votto, and that's been tough. And I actually just dropped him a couple days ago, and it's matchup dependent and just the strengths that my team had built up around him. Most of these guys, Stanton's on my home league team, several of my best ball teams especially, because that's a good format for bold predictions of just best case scenario. But my TGFBI league has Yasmani Grandal. I was really hitching my wagon to a lot of those changes, and I'm just totally facing the backlash of it. But unfortunately, a lot of them also, it's literally half of my bold predictions and chalkboard picks ended up on my brother's team in the leagues that we're in, because he listens to all the shows. And I'm like, thanks a lot for that. In terms of how I take it into my actual management, for me, it's an extra long hold. If one of these guys were my guys, I will give them, I don't like to use the term leash, but like another 2 or 3 weeks to figure something out. Whereas I would have dropped an Eric Hosmer, but I'll hold on to Joey Votto another 3 or 4 weeks. Or if I need somebody off the wire, I'm quicker to scoop up a Jorge Soler because I've already done the research on him. And I know that there's reasons to believe as recent as last season. Now, in terms of how quickly to throw away the research that was done, I think you just have to try to understand what that narrative is. And some of them are closer than other ones. So like Connor Joe was giving us a small glimpse of a power breakout that we didn't expect. And we've seen that before with guys like Francisco Lindor, name the player, where they come up with more of a contact hit profile and they start unlocking power. And one of my bold predictions was that Connor Joe was going to hit 30 bombs. And there was some reason to believe that could be possible at Coors. Pretty early on, you can see that's not, with the sample size we have, that's not the type of player he is. So quickly you can recalibrate on some of those expectations. Or Yasmani Grandal, it was all about the K rate and the Ks were through the roof. So it's okay, that was too small of a sample size from mid, late August to the end of the season last year. So you can move from that. But there are ones like Jorge Soler, where I know he's on the IL right now. Everything that was in the write-up of my bold prediction matches pretty closely to what his underlying metrics look like today. So when Soler comes back, I'll be much quicker to buy in and say, all right, the K rate is still sub 30. I know it's not great at 28%, but he's still taking walks. His barrel rate is identical. Just different things that we saw when he broke out with the Braves second half of last season. So that's the way I view it, is matching the narrative of the bold prediction up to the current stat line and underlying numbers.
Yeah, I like how you said like the recalibration. This is a good time of year to recalibrate the research you did in the preseason versus what's actually put on paper. So you can see, hey, does it match up? That Soler's example you just gave was a perfect example to that. Yeah, it's not fantasy-wise, not hitting what I expected or wanted, but I know that what we're seeing underneath is real because of all the research that I did in the preseason and prior to that. So I can at least hold on to that a little bit tighter than I would elsewhere. I think it's really good insight in general about for all those who are also making decisions on who to pick up in your fab leagues when you're debating between player A, player B. It's like, hey, you know what? I have a feeling. It's more than a feel. It's a lot of people be like, I have a feeling player A is going to be better than player B. It's not a feeling because I already put in the time and the effort, and I know that there's something more there. So you can feel a little bit more confident picking up a player like that, that you've already put the time and effort into. All right, that's all really good stuff, I think. And hopefully you guys can utilize that as we enter the second half. This has been one of the years, I think, that the All-Star break has been so close to the actually mathematical halfway point. Typically, I feel like the All-Star game is 3 weeks after the halfway point, or even sometimes before. But this is only about a week. I think every team now has hit their halfway point, their 62 or whatever, their 81 games point. And so pretty close to that All-Star break. So we can actually use that first half, second half splits a little bit more accurately in 2022. But let's get into some actual recommendations for Fab this year, this week. As we tend to do, we go category by category. This is a slightly special Fab weekend just because we have the full week of games ahead of us. And then only anywhere between 2 and 5 games for some teams the following week with the All-Star break hitting us. No future two-start pitcher section this week, as obviously nobody will have two starts the All-Star game weekend, and All-Star game stats do not count toward our fantasy team. Just make sure anybody who's new to the game know that's not something you need to be worried about. But Van, we're going to start in our power category, and I'll let you lead us off this time with your power selection for this coming week and maybe beyond, but at the very least, who are you looking at to add a couple bombs for your teams this week?
I'm a Cardinals fan, so you guys will have to push back if this is a homer bias, no pun intended, but Matt Carpenter, ex-Cardinal, is going off with a 36-year-old resurgence. If you have not been aware for the past week and a half or two for the Yankees, and anytime you got lefty power paired with Yankee Stadium, you have to take notice. They have 6 home games this week. So I love what's been going on with Carpenter. The past week, he's 9-for-23 with 3 homers. The past month, an 1175 OPS. And I had to go just check out because some nostalgia. But the story is pretty cool, too, that Ken Rosenthal covered. That I guess he went all over the place this offseason to retool his swing. He called Joey Votto. He traveled around the country to like hitting coaches. He worked with Arenado, Goldie, Matt Holliday, a bunch of ex-teammates. And this is exactly what I'm talking about with the narrative, because he has the highest launch angle that he's ever had in the StatCast era for his career. He has the lowest ground ball rate of his career. And pair that with Yankee Stadium, it's pretty exciting for what he's been doing lately. That said, Anthony Rizzo is coming back, which is going to create a bit of a logjam in that lineup. But I've got to wonder, when Carpenter's hitting lefties and righties the way he is, if they're just going to try to find a way to rotate Rizzo, IKF, Donaldson, Matt Carpenter. Like, I could see them shaking things around to give Carpenter at bats for 4 out of 5 games. And the production has been impossible to argue with. It's the mustache power for Carpenter. And this is my pick this week. And hey, I also need some pop in my TGFBI league, so I will definitely be putting in a bid, although it probably will be a pricey one just given how noisy his breakout has been with the whole Red Sox Yankees rivalry going on.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about Carpenter on the show in the past, right, Kevin? How close is he to hitting your bold prediction of 30 bombs this year?
It seems like he gets closer by the day. I don't even know what to think. I do agree with the Rizzo coming back, but he was finding his way in there 4 or 5 times a week when the Yankees were seemingly healthy. So I think they'll still find him his spots. And fans, lefty power hitter that has bounced back with the contact like he has after his horrible 2021, there's spots for him, definitely.
And there's definitely spots for him on most teams, as he's only 13% rostered in the main event and 2% rostered in online championships. Readily available even in those deep 15 teamers on the NFBC format. And I would venture to guess readily available on like Yahoo and CBS formats as well. Kevin, who's hitting a couple extra bombs for you this week leading up to the All-Star game?
Yeah, I think because he's with the Pirates, once we get to 12 team leagues and below, what Michael Chavis is doing is going completely overlooked. And he's 81% rostered in main event leagues. Obviously that's going to drop as we go down. And especially when we get to Yahoo and we don't have a corner, don't have a middle, but he is first base and second base eligible. That helps. His strikeout rate is about 5 percentage points below what it was last season, below his career rate. So we're looking at he's on pace to do what he did back in 2019 when we got excited about Michael Chavis. And a full 7-game week coming up this week, including 3 at Coors Field. He's out there in shallower leagues, and even almost a fifth of 15 team main event leagues he's available.
I got him in a couple of like draft and holds and DCs and what have you, and it's nice to have the flexibility. But I agree with you. I think it's going unnoticed even in those leagues that I have him in draft and holds. And so, no, I don't even have to pick him up, and I'm not taking advantage of this. I realized that's this past week. And so hopefully I will change that this week as I set my lineups on Monday. All right, let's move on to some speed options. Kevin, go right back to you because I cannot wait to hear what you have to say here. Who's scoring? I'm going to assume scoring some runs, maybe stealing some bases for you leading up to the All-Star break.
No, this is just something to keep an eye on because it probably means nothing. But we've talked about most of these guys that we can pick up with matchups at a weekly basis throughout the season. We've talked about a lot of the guys that are going to be available. Look at the matchups, go grab them. But Rougned Odor has stolen 3 bases in the past 2 games. No idea why. This has come out of nowhere. He hasn't stolen.
This is the moment. This is the moment I wish I had those like sound effects that I could add in, either that it's just or whatever.
But what's interesting to me is he stole 1 base a couple nights ago after not stealing bases in what, 3 seasons, and then comes back the next night and he's probably like, oh yeah, I remember how to do that, and he stole 2 more. He's with the Orioles, who are horrible. He's in the lineup every day. I guess we were talking earlier, Baltimore is not as horrible.
4 games back from the wild card.
4 games back from the wild card. So Odor is one of those guys I look at every single week before this show. And as I'm writing my article, I look at him every week because he's so close, right? With that 205 batting average, we're just like, but we just talked about Michael Chavis. Mm-hmm. His batting average isn't a whole lot better than that. They have the same 9 home runs. And now if Odor is going to start taking a bag once in a while, then I'm interested. Second base and third base eligibility, only 21% rostered in the main events, 2% in online championships, which means he's available in every Yahoo league out there probably. So it's something to keep an eye on. I don't expect him to go steal double digit bases the rest of the season, but if they are going to give him a green light once in a while and he gets a handful while hitting another 9 home runs, then I'm interested in deeper leagues.
Yeah. I will also say, I joke obviously, but these are the types of recommendations and players that we talk about that make a great bottom of your waterfall, a bottom of your contingency bids. Is I need to fill this spot. If I don't win one of these bids, I will take a 0 in this position. So I will throw Odor on there for a 1-2, maybe even a $3 bid, just so I know I will fill this spot and get, and as Kevin
said, gonna get like, a couple RBI,
gonna get
a run or two. You're hoping you get a home run, and if he throws in a stolen base, you're jumping up and down.
Exactly.
What 6% of main event leagues had him in their lineup this weekend, and they just got 3 stolen bases out of nowhere.
It's so shocking that Baseball Savant hasn't even updated. They actually have him at 1 steal, which he has 3. They're just in denial that Odor is back to stealing right now. I had to refresh. I was like, what do you
got? It's a different Odor. Yeah, it's somebody different. All right, Van. Instead of going with Ruggie over here, who are you looking at then that might steal some bases? And I'm equally interested to hear what you have to say here.
Yeah, it's equally as interesting. And wait, are we actually talking about Aaron Hicks helping you in speed and runs? But when he stays on the field, which is always the if, Aaron Hicks has actually been pretty active on the base paths. And I had to double look and refresh, but two steals this week for Aaron Hicks, and he now has 9 this season in just 73 games. What's also interesting is he's been caught 3 times. So the fact that Hicks has attempted 12 bases already is really interesting to me. And he's, for how big he is, he actually can move pretty quick. His sprint speed is 62nd percentile on the Savant page. And last time he played this volume of games was in 2018, and he had 11 steals. So it's not impossible for him to rack up some steals. And I think in that bottom third of the Yankees lineup, he's getting opportunities there. And even in the past 4 games, he has 7 runs scored as well. So it's just not what you'd really think of with Hicks, but I think that there might be some sneaky opportunity, especially this week, 2 games against the Reds, and the Reds give up the 4th most steals in the league. It's just 2 games, but I wouldn't be surprised if Hicks gets 1 or 2, and it's probably going to cost a little bit of a fab bid because he's had a big week and the Yankees are the Yankees this season. But I think Hicks is an interesting option to kind of chip in and help with steals.
You say that Hicks is not somebody you think about, but it's, as you mentioned, your home league's been going around for 21 years. If you've been playing this game long enough, like you remember that's what Hicks, when he was coming up, is like, yeah, he was a 2020 guy. He was a guy who was going to give you both categories on the regular. The problem is he just never played on the regular because of all the injury history, as you mentioned. And so I have a hard time not thinking of that. But if you just started off recently and you've just been playing for the last like 2 or 3 years, yeah, I agree. It's not what you think of because you don't see Hicks playing enough.
And he's 32. And he's 6'1", 2. He's a big guy.
He's not the prototypical, yes, if you will. He's not Ruggie Odor after all. I mean, come on. All right. That's a couple of, I would say, under the radar speed options for you guys to consider as you're going into your fab bids this weekend. We'll get into our last hitting category, the opportunities section. Guys who might have some good matchups coming up, lots of playing time, maybe some extra roster flexibility. Before that, I'm going to run down, and this is going to be my own little monologue because there's a lot to talk about as far as the schedule goes for the next week or two that you might want to consider as you're making your bid. So this coming week, half the league has a full slate of games coming up. So that's Boston, Tampa Bay, the White Sox, Cleveland, Kansas City, Detroit, Texas, Atlanta, Miami, the Mets, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Colorado, San Diego, and San Francisco. They all play at least one game each of the 7 days leading up to the All-Star break, with the White Sox and Cleveland Guardians having a doubleheader on Tuesday. And Detroit and Kansas City play a doubleheader on Monday, giving each of them 8 games in the week. Colorado will be back home for all 7 games next week. They do host San Diego for the first 4 and then hosting Pittsburgh for 3 over the weekend. Now, Baltimore, the Angels, and the Dodgers have 2 scheduled off days, with both teams from the LA region being off on Monday and Sunday, which is just weird. I haven't seen that all season. Seen some Friday off games. I don't think I've seen a Sunday off game. And then the following week, we have the Giants, the Dodgers, Miami, Texas, Oakland, Houston, and the Yankees. They have at least 4 games the following week after the All-Star break, whereas the rest of the league only plays 3, with exception of Minnesota, who only has 2. And that'll be 2 games that you can't adjust for. Oakland and Detroit do play a doubleheader on Thursday after the break, the first day back. That gives Oakland 5 games, Detroit 4, despite the off day on Friday for Detroit. So that's nice to be able to get that extra game in over the weekend. And the Yankees and Houston play a doubleheader on that Thursday as well. They each will have 5 games throughout the week as well. So very important to know as you are adjusting your fab bids for this week, as you're making bids in preparation for 2 weeks out, and knowing that you can flip your lineups after Thursday. So there are a couple of those doubleheaders on Thursday. You could get those extra at-bats in if you have enough flexibility in your roster to roster those players. So with all that in mind and more, Kevin, who are you looking at to take advantage of the opportunities that they have in front of them for this coming week or beyond?
I'm going right back to Pittsburgh again, and Diego Castillo, eligible second base, shortstop, outfield, only 38% rostered in main events, 2% in online championships, so widely available in 10 and 12 team leagues everywhere. And it's understandable. Not a good batting average. Was pretty well sought after when he made his debut early in the season, but that wore off pretty quickly after a couple of nice games and hasn't performed well. But he's got 8 home runs over the past 3 weeks, and they have a trip to Coors Field this week as part of their 7-game week. So with that eligibility, full week, he's a guy that can fill in many spots for you. If you need a chance at a home run or two this week, could have used him in the power category, but with the trip to Colorado in a full week, he fits right here in opportunities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And Van, I will hit it over to you as far as any guys that might have a good opportunity ahead of them this coming week.
I like Eric Haas, and I know in some industry leagues, he's a little bit more rostered around like 70%. He is available in my TGFBI league, which is what brought this up for me, but with the catcher eligibility and the Tigers having an 8-game week, and the Tigers are also playing good baseball right now, I really like Haas. He's been a part of the hot streak that the Tigers are on. The past 2 weeks, he's hit 2 homers in each of those weeks. So he's got 4 bombs in the past 2 weeks, past month, and 1100 OPS. And at the catcher position, it's just so rare to have a guy who's actually performing that well with 8 games as well. He probably is going to play like 6 of those, 5-6, but still you'll take that. And when he does play, he gets pretty good volume because he's usually batting 4th or 5th. So I like Haas a lot, especially with the lineup that the Tigers have this week with the volume as well.
The volume will play, especially at the catcher position. If he is available, take a look at Eric Haas, 72% rostered, as Vin alluded to, in the main event, 36% rostered across online championships, a big dip between the 15s and the 12s, but still 1 out of 4 leagues in those 15 teamers, at least in the main event, rarely available. So especially if you're like me and you feel like dropping Christian Betancourt, or cost is an option at catcher there. All right. As I mentioned, we're going to skip our typical future 2-start section, as obviously nobody will get 2 starts the following week, and it's just a little too far ahead to go 3 weeks in advance, for me at least. So we will skip down that and go right to this coming week with our counting categories. Van, I'll jump it right back to you here for wins and Ks. Who do you like for this coming week leading up to the All-Star break?
I like Reed Detmers. I think he's had an interesting season. It's a guy it's tough to make sense of. He had the no-hitter everyone talked about, but there were only like 2 strikeouts. But it's easy to overlook the fact that he was really a strikeout pitcher. Last year in the high minors, he had 108 strikeouts in just 62 innings. And this past outing he had was 6 innings, 7 Ks against the Orioles. Now, he does have the Dodgers next Friday, which is a big one. But in terms of beyond that, if you want to get in on the cheap now, coming out of All-Star break, he's got to start against the Royals and then the Oakland A's. So that would be a juicy back-to-back for Reed Detmers. And I think there should be more strikeouts moving forward for him than the 7 per 9 innings that he's had so far this season. So I did this one halfway, Adam, on looking beyond the All-Star break as well. But I think there's a lot of reason for excitement with Detmers, and people have cooled off on him, I think, just because of the low Ks so far.
Yeah, it would seem as though the adjustments he talked about making in recent trip to AAA have, at least in the first start, translated in a positive direction. So that's something to look forward to there. Detmers is a strange one because we don't usually run into this in the fact that he is more rostered in 12-team online championships at 20%. Compared to only 15% rostered across main events in those 15 teamers. So we don't come across that very often. So readily available in those 15 teamers, still readily available in online championships, but just to a slightly lesser degree. Kevin, who are you looking at for wins and Ks this coming week?
Yeah, we looked at Glenn Otto a little bit last week when we were looking ahead at 2 starts, and I was iffy on it, but I thought he might be my second or third choice for guys with 2 starts this week. And as this schedule is played out, I had a really hard time finding anybody I really liked this week. And it's interesting that just a day or two ago, Todd Zola tweeted out that every afternoon he goes through the following day's schedule and looks for pitchers to stream. And over this season, it's been much easier to find three or four guys every day, as opposed to the past, just looking at matchups. And that's what I've been doing throughout the season as well, but looking at the week ahead, not on a daily basis each afternoon. And for the most part, I've agreed with that. There's been several guys to choose from each and every week, in my opinion, at least that I had interest in. I don't see a whole lot of this week. However, you can't not like the matchups for Glenn Otto. He gets Oakland to start out the week, who has taken over the reign from Detroit as the worst hitting team versus right-handed pitching in the league. So he gets them, and then he gets Seattle towards the end of the week in their bottom half, I think 17th. Yeah, barely, and they barely have a 700 OPS versus righties as a team. I believe I did mention it last week. The walks have been the issue with Glenn Otto this year. Even in his nice outings, he's walking two, three, four guys and getting away with it. He didn't get away with it for a couple of games, and he bounced back this week at Baltimore. Still had the three walks. Would love to see him just get through an outing with only one or two walks. That would be amazing. But getting Oakland and Seattle this week, I look for his nice outings. Even in spite of those walks, he's given up two or less earned runs in four of his last six outings. I look for that to continue against these matchups he has this coming week.
All right, Glenn Otto, keep a lookout for him. 53% roster in the main event, readily available in online championships at 3%. And then, of course, Reed Detmers, as we talked about with Van. Those are your counting category pitchers. Kevin, go right back to you for some ratios, guys, some guys that can chip away at our ERA and WHIP. And we are getting deep into the season now, halfway through. If you're not trying to chip away, it's going to be a whole lot harder as the season goes on. So who are you looking at to help out with those categories this coming week?
Yeah, these are the kind of guys that I'm looking at in all of my leagues this weekend. We'll just get for the tip we usually talk about at the end. We're going to bake it in right here, because when we have a 3.5-day week coming out of the All-Star break, chances are we don't have six or seven starting pitchers going that weekend that we're comfortable with. We need to get a couple of these guys this week, because next weekend, everybody's going to be after them. So anywhere you have an extra spot to spare, grab a reliever. Grab guys like this. I don't think we've mentioned this season, maybe as a speculative closer, we might have really early in the season, but Michael Givens hasn't given up an earned run in over nine appearances now, nine scoreless. Three of those are multi-inning. We like to see to help out with the ratios even more. Striking guys out, 43 strikeouts and 34 innings pitched on the season. And so he is one of the guys along these lines that, like I said, any extra spots you have, you're not filling for this coming week, grab a guy like this so you can have him for the following weekend.
Nice. Good way to consolidate the show, Kevin, by connecting two categories. I appreciate that. Van, why don't we do the same thing with you in a way? Talk to me about anybody that you think could chip away your ERA and your WHIP, and then stick with relievers and move right into your saves recommendations for this weekend.
Yeah, we mentioned Justin Steele earlier, who's on paternity leave, but I actually like Steele a lot with how he works in his slider. He locates it really well and gets good whiffs with it, and he's found a really nice groove in the past month, over 29 innings, a strikeout per inning, a 3.07 ERA, and a 1.23 WHIP, which is okay, but I think he will help in ERA, and he has to come back from the paternity leave on Tuesday when they're playing the Orioles. So he should get either the Tuesday or the Wednesday start against the Orioles. And I actually like some of the matchups the Cubs have mid-month after All-Star break. At the Phillies, a little rocky, but then there's the Pirates and then at San Francisco. So I think Steele can help you a little bit in that regard. So not a reliever, but somebody who I do think can pick up a bulk of innings and help with ERA. Shifting to relievers, man, this is always the headache for me, and it's my Achilles heel. in my TGFBI right now. I think I would move from eighth to fourth if I would have had any sort of success with saves. But I think Brustar Graterol is an interesting one that could get a lot more pricey with Kimbrel, who's been bad and injured. And I know Trinan's getting ready to return. So Graterol got a save this week. And the strikeouts are solid for him as well. And then for the Phillies, I know Sir Anthony Dominguez has been terrific, but Brad Hand got two saves this past week. He's on a big contract, and it seems even though Dominguez has been rock solid, they're willing to give Hand opportunities here and there. So I think that's one that if you're really desperate and just looking for the odd save here or there, he could be a help. Jorge Lopez has also been struggling quite a bit for the Orioles. It could be something with Felix Bautista, as well as a guy who's been kind of lights out lately. Those are just a few names that popped up in relievers, but I usually listen to you guys for this segment of the show.
I will not stand for the Jorge Lopez slander.
He's been better very recently.
Yeah, right? He's got three saves in the last 4 days with no earned runs. Yes, he's bounced back quite a bit.
From infinity.
He's been the one, yeah. The INF ERA that he had in at least one, if not two games. But yeah, when he struggled mightily for two out of three games recently. Luckily for my home league where I roster Lopez, Bautista came in and blew himself up as well, giving what I saw as Lopez the opportunity to come back and reclaim his dominance. And I will use dominance as loosely as it is allowed to be used. But no, Lopez has been great. And the Baltimore Orioles are only four games out of the wild card spot. So they're obviously a very good team. I will piggyback on the Graterol comment. And just if you're speculating in Los Angeles, at least for the Dodgers, Evan Phillips, you got to take a look at him, especially with Graterol being supposedly hurt, but not really hurt. Like, he's supposed to come back and be available. He did, like you said, he did get the save opportunity, did convert it, but Phillips has been absolutely insane. He's probably been the best reliever in that bullpen all season long. And he did get the win yesterday, obviously lucky with the walk-off in the extra innings. But Phillips has been as solid and as strong as anybody in that bullpen. I speculated on him in my home league last week. We only have so many ads you can add in that week per week. So I'm like, all right, as soon as I picked him up, of course, Graterol got the save. And I'm like, all right, well, I can't drop him because that isn't a waste. And like, I didn't get anything out of him. Luckily, I got that win. So that's nice. Somebody to look out there. Kevin, you got anybody besides Brad Martin? Because you got Brad Martin written down here and we talked about him quite a bit. So unless you got a lot more to talk about him, you got another name in there for us to think about?
No, but something I would like to add is going back to what we just talked about with our ratios guys. If he's not the closer, the Rangers, he can still be in your lineup. The Rangers get Seattle and Oakland this week. And guess what two teams they get when we come out of the break? They get Seattle and Oakland again. Nice. With a game at Miami thrown in there. So this can be, there's a good backup plan. If he is not the closer, you throw him out there this week, the Rangers don't get a save opportunity tomorrow. He's still going to be all right in a 7-game week with two of the worst hitting teams in baseball.
All right, good. You had something new to add to the conversation, which is what I trust you'll be able to do. Brett Martin, again, I don't have to tag him twice, though, in the article. So that's nice. All right, let's finish this off, guys, in my favorite section. I always like hearing you guys have to throw out there in our wild card section, our speculative ads, any reason whatsoever. It might be a bench stash, might be an IL stash. It's usually our stashing season section. And Kevin, I'm going to start you off here. Let Fan finish us off. Who is your wild card selection this week, Kev?
Yeah, somebody I started picking up a couple of weeks ago in spots where I had room. I think I already had to drop him in one spot. That's what happens with stashes from time to time. But on weeks when we have a spot, I've started trying to grab Lance McCullers. Doesn't appear that it'll be too long after the All-Star break when we see him back. And with a couple of other guys, like we talked about Sixto Sanchez earlier and some of these that we might be stashing it, it appears that it'll be longer than we had hoped, or maybe not this season at all. A guy like Lance McCullers could be back for the stretch run for Houston, and we may see him by early August. We're looking at 3-4 weeks. With a half a week of that, we don't have games to play anyway.
Yeah, these are always difficult recommendations. They're fun, but they're always difficult because we all know how we're all hurting in this category, and this we're all stashing injuries and what have you, especially in those types of leagues that don't have those IL spots for your roster. But always it's good to keep an eye on those guys that you haven't been thinking about and you don't look at when you look at your fab options, because you're like, I need to fill a roster spot. So if you do have some kind of flexibility whatsoever, Lance McCullers, exactly, somebody should be, yeah.
The out. Only thing that got me looking at Lance McCullers is I have him on the IL in a keeper league, and I saw a little note. I'm like, oh, he's throwing off a mound again. Oh, he's throwing curveballs off a mound. Maybe we ought to take a look at this, or I wouldn't have noticed either.
Another plug for playing in multiple types of leagues. So there you go. Well done. Van, who is your wild card for this coming week as we head closer and closer to the All-Star break?
Full transparency, I could have consolidated the show here because I didn't have one prepped, but I'm working on the fly, Adam, and saw that Corbin Carroll got promoted to AAA today. So this is a guy for in the Diamondbacks organization who has a 10 or over 1,000 OPS and 16 home runs, 20 steals. A lot of people think he's on the doorstep of a promotion sometime in the second half of the season. And if he does, he could be the quote-unquote league winner with a 15% walk rate, power-speed combo for the Diamondbacks. So it would be a leap, but we've seen Michael Harris II do that and succeed. So I love everything about Carroll. I know dynasty-wise, he's absolutely must roster, but I think now he can be on the radar for stash material.
I was going to say he's a poor man's Michael Harris, so thanks for stealing that from me. No, obviously Corbin Carroll, top of so many different prospect lists, even with the former injury that he came back from. I like the call there. I wonder how much time he's going to be given in AAA. But I would have said the same thing about, I thought they called up Alec Thomas earlier than I expected this year. I did expect Thomas to make the leap, but not as early as they made it. So maybe Arizona is trying to do something, get their young guys more experience at the major league level, which I couldn't recommend more, especially as a fantasy player. All right. Since Kevin already solidated his final words into his advice about picking up relievers, especially with the anywhere between 2 and 5 game slate after the All-Star break, that's going to do it for us. And Van Burnett, again, thanks so much for joining us this week, man. Could you take 2 seconds to remind everybody what you do and where you do it?
Yeah, occasional articles on PitcherList, but most of the time recording podcasts with Steve Giswelli, my co-host for Wins Above Fantasy. We're all-purpose fantasy show every Thursday morning on the main PitcherList feed. You guys can follow us on Twitter at Wins Above Pod. I'm at Van_verified. And yeah, we're just talking baseball every week, even in the off season, and occasionally jumping around the network for shows like this. Can't thank you guys enough for having me on. It's always great listening, but it's extra fun to be on the show and cook through the full rundown. This has been great.
Yeah, this was amazing. Thanks, Van, for coming on. And you and Steve, if you guys, seriously, if you made it all the way through the show and you're still listening, please make sure you go and listen to these guys on Wins Above Fantasy. They have an amazing rapport together. And it's like one of those things where it's like most of us, right, Van, most of us were placed together when we started the PitcherList Podcast Network a year and a half ago. We were placed together, Kevin and I. We were just placed together by Nick, and it worked out really well. You guys, if I didn't say that out loud, there's no way anybody would have assumed that was the case for you guys as well. You guys blend together really well, and I know I enjoy listening to you guys on a weekly basis as well. So more props to you guys, and keep up the good work. Make sure you guys are listening to them. And that is going to wrap it up for episode 67 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. We will be back every Sunday with a detailed fab breakdown throughout the 2022 season. And of course, keep a lookout for Kevin's companion article over at PitcherList.com. It comes out every Sunday afternoon as well. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. I'd like to once again thank our guest Van Burnett for joining us. Follow him at Van_verified. With that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And with that, we bid you goodbye.